This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Entertainment Technology World. We're about to speak to two top managers at a company called Midnet. Welcome to both of you, Peter Fentiman, founder, president, CEO, and director of Midnet, and Thilo Kunz, founder, chairman, COO, and director of Midnet. Welcome to Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Now, Midnet, let's get right to it, has created the Middle Net. What is the Middle Net?
This is Thilo speaking, Mark.
Okay, hi, Thilo.
The Middle Network was created in order to provide an alternative to the Internet. The Internet, as we understand it, was really developed with a non-commercial use in mind. Over the last 10 years, roughly, we have been using it more and more for business. And what we have found through working with many companies, primarily in the motion picture industry, is that they like what the industry can, what the internet can do for them, but there's things that it can't do that they require.
What are the kinds of things that they need it to do that it can't?
Well, the things that they wanted to do in our particular case was they had security issues. They wanted to be able to sit on top of a private network. But they still wanted it to be neutral, so it had to be like the internet in that they could communicate with all of their different business partners, be they suppliers or customers, and in some cases even to be able to collaborate with their competitors.
Now, specifically, what do you mean when you say neutral? Is that a particular term of art in terms of network architecture?
The way that we define that word for the middle network and the way that we would use that word with respect to the internet is that the internet sits on top of multiple telecommunications companies.
Right.
And it is powered by multiple manufacturers' products of switching and router equipment.
Okay.
There isn't a single telecommunications company or a single manufacturer of equipment that controls the internet.
Or is responsible for it either.
Or, exactly. Exactly.
And so where does neutrality come in?
Well, what we've done is we modeled ourselves after the internet from the neutrality perspective, and that is we are not tied to a single carrier,
right,
a single telecommunications company, nor are we dependent on a single hardware manufacturer or software producer in order to run the middle network.
Okay, it's starting to sound like the middle network is an alternative or shadow or alternative internet. Is that what it is?
We like to refer to it quite often as a commercial complement to the internet.
Okay.
We're not there to replace the internet. That the internet obviously has been very good for society, at least we believe so.
But essentially, what you're doing is creating another network that uses the same internet protocols?
Not necessarily. What we've done is we've created a network that can use internet protocols.
Right.
But if you wanted to use different protocols, those would also be available to you.
For example, what other protocols are there?
If you needed to use ATM, you would be able asynchronous transfer mode. Is,
right.
It's pretty much a mainstay in the telecommunications industry.
Right.
If you needed to broadcast video and by that, we're talking about broadcast quality, 45 megabit per second and above. You would be using different protocols. You might have proprietary protocols. All of those would have to be able to run over the middle network.
So the middle network can adapt itself to use existing internet protocols or, as you mentioned, some of these other more specific and even proprietary ones.
Yes, we can work with individual companies. Either end-user companies or application service providers to help them develop application services that will run over the Internet, independent of protocol.
Okay, who are going to be the users generically? You don't have to name names, but what types of companies are most likely to want to use the middle net?
Well, currently we have focused most of our attention on the motion picture industry and also in the oil and gas sector.
Right.
The motion picture industry uses a number of applications that would be, you know, traditional brick and mortar type. They'll shoot film in one city and they'll put it onto a courier service in order to get it to another city. In our scenario, by digitizing the workflow, they would digitize these movies or television shows and they would move them digitally across the middle network. And This is something that they're very familiar with. We're not reinventing the wheel here. All we're doing is we're providing a network environment that allows them to do this cost-effectively and privately.
Now, you've already done that for one company, is that right? Was that sort of the basis of the founding of MidNet?
Yeah, we worked as individuals prior to founding MidNet. We worked with one studio in particular, and we worked with them to help them digitize their workflow. We did build a prototype network. It ran for quite some time. It was used in order to move digitized movies, or primarily television shows, actually, from city to city. And they also used it for collaboration, using very, very high-quality video conferencing. They used the collaboration for the editing processes, as well as things like casting and wardrobe.
Okay, now tell people who aren't in the industry exactly what workflow is and what it means to digitize it.
When you watch a DVD movie,
right,
what you're watching is something that probably originated on film or tape and was then converted into zeros and ones. And that process is digitizing, and it can then live as a file. So when you're watching a DVD movie, you're watching something that is effectively a file.
Right. No, I meant to focus a little bit on workflow, what that means in the context of the entertainment industry.
Okay, sure, sorry.
It's all right.
The general workflow that I guess we're fitting into now is that a studio would be working on a television show, let's say in New York.
Right.
And the studio itself may be at home in Los Angeles. And the show that they're working on in New York, every single day, they have a film that is shot. It goes to a local post-production facility that processes the film, and the film then is digitized, turned into a file or into several files, and moved electronically over to the studio in Los Angeles. This generally happens, the movement of the film generally happens after hours, so early hours of the morning, say between 1 and 5 a.m., when the executives in Hollywood show up in the morning, they take a look at the footage, and the footage is referred to as dailies. And they take a look at this, they make decisions on what they want to do differently or the same for this shooting day. And if they need to, they will then collaborate directly with their staff in New York in order to discuss matters, to make decisions, to participate in some of the decisions that have to be made on set. And life goes on, and generally the rule of thumb seems to be that one day's worth of shooting is worth $100,000 to $150,000, and therefore it's very, very important to them that, and if they're going to use a digital solution as opposed to a courier, that it is reliable, that footage shows up the next morning. Because if they can't see what happened, they can't make decisions for that day.
How traditionally is that? Are the dailies sent from New York to Los Angeles?
In some cases, they've built private networks. In some cases, they will put the film onto an early flight, either an airplane that would be it could be hand carried. It could be put onto a FedEx plane. Often they needed to show up first thing in the morning, so time zone matters. If it were reverse, for example, if it was something shot in Los Angeles, it'd be more difficult to get it to New York on time. So depending on where they're shooting in the world, they have to decide these things.
And in fact, what's being transferred at the base is really just information, and if it's digital information, it might as well be transferred over a network as in an airplane, right?
Well, not only that, one of the things that we're trying to do with the motion picture industry is protect that information. And we can protect it, we believe we can protect it more if it's in a digital format moved over a private network, like the middle network, than we can as a physical shipment. And this, just so we're clear on the magnitude of this problem, Hollywood loses in excess of $4.5 billion a year to piracy.
Right.
And most of that is happening during the production, post-production process.
And that's essentially by insiders absconding with physical media that hold the entertainment materials.
Unfortunately, yes. But I would say it's also absconding with digital material.
Right.
And in many cases, we have witnessed ourselves digital assets being stolen during the transmission process. So it's very important that a network that fulfills this role is private and does have ways in order to protect these assets.
Okay, now protected from everything from theft to worms and viruses and other impediments of the normal internet?
Yeah, yeah.
How does the midnet keep out those little troublemakers?
We don't bridge public networks. So we don't bridge the internet. We don't bridge telephone networks. We basically have architected a multi-company private network. And what we're able to do is allow subscribers to the middle network to isolate their trusted partners into subnets, let's call them that. So if there was a studio, where you go back to the studio in Los Angeles example, and they had one production happening in New York, they can isolate each other so that the production, the set in New York, could not see anyone else on the network, nor could they open themselves up to be seen by anyone else. So New York could be controlled through Los Angeles to make sure that those avenues for worms and viruses and hackers and pirates to come in have been closed.
Okay, so you're pretty much guaranteeing that this is going to be a fast and cost-effective and trouble-free transfer of information from one site to the other.
Yeah, we basically are providing what we believe to be the safest way to conduct business electronically, but there is always going to be new attacks on networks. I think that's just that's the nature of the world today. We have to do the best we can in order to protect against those attacks, and that's what we're out to do.
Okay. Now, what cities is this service going to be available everywhere, or just in capitals of the entertainment industry?
Well, we're rolling out right now in four primary cities, and it'll expand to seven by the end of this year. And they are focused on the motion picture industry.
Which are they?
They are Los Angeles, of course, being the largest.
Right.
New York and Chicago, Vancouver in Canada, and Toronto and Montreal in Canada, and then London, England. These seem to be the seven primary cities that the motion picture industry is concerned with.
Okay. Now, the system is only going to be good for transmission between and among those cities, right? If you're in Nairobi or Buenos Aires or Houston,
yeah,
you're not going to be able to take advantage of it.
That's correct.
Okay.
And what we have to do is we have to be able to respond to demand as we have more cities. We have about 35 cities already on the map right now that we know are important.
So maybe Shanghai will become a big, or Hong Kong will become important in film.
Yeah, there's a number of cities in the Far East.
Right.
Also
Tokyo.
In Europe, of course.
Yes.
And in Australia, New Zealand.
Right. Now, what industries beyond entertainment do you have targeted for this service?
We're working aggressively in the oil and gas sector already.
Right.
We're not at the point today where we're launching anything yet, but we do plan on launching something very soon.
Is that going to mean difference? I mentioned probably just randomly Houston, but the cities that are big in oil and gas, are those the cities that are big in entertainment? Or are you going to have to build outposts in new places?
Yeah, there's a little bit of crossover. The nice thing about the entertainment industry is that everyone wants to be entertained. Every city in the world, every town in the world has an entertainment component. Either they're consumers of entertainment or they're producers or they're both.
Right.
But the cities that we're targeting right now for the oil and gas sector would include Houston, of course.
Right.
And there is some crossover that we've already seen, yes.
Okay, now, expanding on that a little bit, does this system have the potential to provide distribution as well as production capability for the entertainment industry?
Absolutely.
How would that work exactly?
The strategy that we've been employing here is that if you can protect a digital asset at the creation stage,
right,
you have hopefully worked with application service providers who can extend that out through the distribution. And if we are able to protect these assets during the production, post-production phase, there's a component of that digital workflow that includes what's referred to generally as digital asset management.
Right.
And this will include activities later on like licensing of content, distribution to cinemas, digital cinemas, that would be distribution to head ends for cable companies and satellite television companies. And as far as the middle network is concerned, that's it's transparent to us, whether it's a production site or a distribution site. It's very, very simple for us to cookie cutter our network out into new locations.
Does digital rights management technology figure into this somewhere?
Very much so. That is integrated within digital asset management.
Okay. What's your approach to that? Have you developed your own digital rights management tools? Are you using someone else's?
Like we started off talking. We've modeled ourselves after the internet. We do not provide application services. When you use the internet today, you might use an email program, let's say from Microsoft, or you might use one from Apple.
Right.
It doesn't matter because we can talk to each other, whether we're using Apple's product or Microsoft's product. The same thing with browsers. Right. Some of us will use Explorer, some will use Netscape. There's many, many different solutions. What we had to be able to do in order to be neutral, so go back to that term again, to be totally neutral the way the internet is, we could not have an application service that we would be competing with our potential clients.
So you're saying the field is open for digital rights management companies to come in and essentially they sell their services to the film studios and use it over your network?
Absolutely. And we have every incentive to help companies develop applications over the middle network.
Okay. Okay, I think, is there anything, before we move on to sort of the business side rather than the technical side, are there any points we haven't covered that are important for people to understand how the MidNet works and what it can do for people?
I think we've pretty much covered the basic points.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the management team, starting with the two of you. What kind of things did you do before you came to and founded MidNet? And what kind of opportunities did you see that you could address through the founding of MidNet?
Maybe what we'll do is I'll speak a little bit about our CTO.
Okay.
And then I'll fill you in a little bit about my own background, and then I'll pass it over to Peter.
Good.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Our CTO came out of the banking industry originally. He worked in Switzerland. Came over, worked for a very large bank here in Canada. The focus, of course, the joke we like to tell in Hollywood is, you know, nothing's more valuable than money. So,
right.
You know, if we can protect money, then we should be able to protect movies.
Right.
But this is basically where his mindset has been, is that he's been focusing on...
What's this person's name?
Sorry?
I'm sorry, the name of your CTO?
Rudy Ashwanden.
Okay.
So he worked for a long time in the banking industry, moved to Canada, continued in the banking industry, and then started working in software development and focused on software for electronic commerce.
Right.
And about 7 or 8 years ago, Rudy and I took on a contract with a company down in Hollywood in order to help one of the studios digitize their workflow. And this was about 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
But we had started working in this area in parallel about 7 or 8 years ago. But the contract in Hollywood kind of opened our eyes to a problem, and that was that we were comfortable with the concept of digitizing workflows, and we were comfortable with encoding or digitizing video and audio and media asset management, or what we're now referring to as digital asset management. But what we weren't quite prepared for was the problems we had when it came to the networks.
Right.
Working with the carriers, working in regions where carriers that compete with each other have to collaborate in order to be able to make a service work for multiple companies. So what the carriers generally tried to do was control a network, make it a single vendor solution. And what we found in working in this contract in Hollywood was that a single carrier could never do this. We had to come up with something that was paralleling the internet.
So in fact, the single carriers couldn't do it, and the competitive carriers couldn't do it very well cooperatively. So that the unmet need there was for someone to coordinate the accessibility of all the networks.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Right.
It wasn't our intention to build this. It was just what we found was that there was a need for this.
Right.
And that's how we ended up.
And to use the jargon, that's essentially the value proposition of MidNet.
We discovered a considerable need. The studio told us exactly how to meet the need, you know, with respect to things like neutrality and affordability, reliability. They said, if you can do this, customer. And that's how it worked out.
Okay. Say just a little bit about sort of the founding myth of the company, how you got together and how the company was put together and how you started bringing other people on board.
Okay. Shall I let Peter just give you a bit on his background?
Sure.
I don't know whether we covered all of Pilo's, but obviously you can tell he's come from a background that's well entrenched in the telecommunication business.
Right.
For a number of years, and it's been sort of a dream to put this team together and to fulfill a pain that was identified in Hollywood so that we could carry out a commercialization of a business proposition that would be good for everyone.
Right.
Including the end user and the world, actually. I come out of a manufacturing background myself, and in the last 25 years, I've been involved in public companies. At one point, I had a gentleman that approached me from Washington, Bellevue, Washington, about a project, because he'd come out of the aerospace industry and was responsible for the communication system for the Apollo 8 mission, as I understand it.
Right.
And video conferencing was something that he thought was going to be a major player in the world of communication as the expense of traveling became higher. He felt that this was the way it was going to go in the future. So at that point, I was involved with my own public vehicle. And I looked at the project, analyzed it, and raised $1 million to initiate it. And we were in Infomart, Dallas, Texas, and we set up a shop in Vancouver, Canada, and also one in Washington.
When you say Washington, you mean Washington? I'm sorry. When you say Washington, you mean Washington State or Washington D.C.?
Washington State.
Okay.
Yeah, and we were going to network the country with major corporations. And we had a number of corporations on board, but it was $1,100 an hour for the service. And if it had been, you know, this is all, of course, in the late 80s and early 90s, and I guess if 9/11 had happened, unfortunately, earlier, it would have been a better proposition for us at that point. But those things do occur when they occur for reasons. And it just wasn't commercially viable at that time at $1,100 an hour.
Right.
It was for companies like Shell and Scott Paper and a number of companies, but it wasn't sufficient to sustain a business model. So that sort of went by the wayside. But we did accomplish a number of things along the way. We did some cross-border connections that weren't established prior to us being in business. And so we felt that we'd done a little bit of moving the whole telecommunications network forward at that time. But I went on to do other things, including mergers and acquisitions, and dealt basically in the financial community. So that's where I'm at when it comes to MidNet as well. Tilo and Rudy, we've been sort of hooked up together, putting this together for a number of years now, and I'm sort of the proponent that brings the money and the company together.
Okay, yes. Say a little bit more about the synergy amongst the founders of the company and what each of them is more or less responsible for and how you work together to get more value out of your combination.
Well, it's really interesting. Like, every business has got, in my mind, three components, and one is finance, one is sales, and one is either production or whatever you want to call it in the development stage.
Right.
And with Rudy, we've got the perfect gentleman to analyze and put together all the technical detail that you know, a company of this nature can afford. Tilo is a natural in the telecommunications business and understanding what the model is, putting the model together and having the capability to sell. So now we've got sort of the technology and the sales, and then I bring the other component, which is the financing and all the details in a public company that are required.
Okay, speaking of public company, you are publicly traded, are you?
Yes, we're publicly traded on NASDAQ over-the-counter bulletin board.
Okay, you want to say what
you're...
I'm sorry?
Our trading symbol is MIDX.
MIDX, good. And what's the, do you know where you're, what kind of range you've been trading in?
It's in the early stages, when we went public on December the 11th of 2003, the first trades were at 35, but our range since that has been up as high as 365, and we're currently around the 330 mark.
Okay. Now, what more can you say about other service application service providers besides the ones we've talked about, digital rights management? What other application service providers are likely or have already gotten involved in providing services through your network?
Okay, this is Tilo, Mark.
We've
really focused on two primary areas. One is related to the media asset management, which is file transfer.
Right.
And this is as simple as email, but it's not from, you know, it's not limited, of course, to what we consider email today. We might move 20 gigabytes as a transfer. So that would be one half of the businesses we see. The other half would be collaboration. And most of this we see focused on video conferencing. The kinds of companies that will be delivering video conferencing over the middle network are probably the same companies that today are delivering voice over public telephone networks. So we might see the name brand telecommunication companies having video conferencing offerings over the middle network.
And these will essentially be available to any company in those entertainment industry capitals that we've mentioned?
Yeah.
How do people get to the network from, well, we'll get to that in a minute, about how people get to the network from their offices if they're not, you know, in Hollywood or Burbank or something?
Yeah, it'll actually go beyond that, Mark. One of the nice things of having had the opportunity to help one of these studios digitize their workflow is that we dealt not just with the media people. We dealt with the lawyers and the accountants and the, you know, the engineers who have to do the set design. And so we have all sorts of vertical industries that will be integrated into this workflow. So we're starting with the motion picture industry, but some of the early subscribers to the network we're anticipating will be lawyers, for example.
Who send a lot of documents around.
Exactly. And more importantly, very confidential documents.
Right. Let's revisit the idea of security on the network. Essentially, what you're talking about now is transfer, and you made a joke about it before, but it's sort of true. The kind of things you're transferring are more valuable than money in some cases, that information. And that's the digital information that makes films, the digital information that constitutes lawsuits that may cost people billions of dollars.
Yeah.
What don't give away the secrets, but in general, what kind of approaches are you using to make absolutely sure, or as absolutely sure as possible, that this information remains absolutely secure?
Yeah. We're essentially what we've done is we built the network inside out. I don't think I'm giving away too much by saying that. The control over every transaction, over every session, actually belongs with the subscriber, with the end user themselves. And you're able to isolate, you're able to create your own network over or through the middle network. So if you and I today decided, let's just set up a video conferencing link for you and I to communicate privately.
Right.
We could set up our own video conferencing connection that we would only use when we wanted to use it.
Right.
Use it on demand.
Right.
But it would be there for us. You could only see me. I could only see you. We'd each have a video conferencing system on each end. When we did call each other up, we would know there's no one else who can be listening in.
How is what you're talking about different than virtual private networks, VPN?
Well, in some respects, it's not. A virtual private network over the internet, of course, always has a higher risk, let's say, of exposure.
It's not called a virtual secure private network. It's called a virtual private network.
You could order a private line from a carrier, and the carrier could connect us together. You could be in New York. I could be in Los Angeles. We could have a virtual private network provided for us by a carrier. But the way that that business works today, and it looks like it'll continue to, is that you and I would be paying for a 24/7 network that was always up. And what we have there is, yes, we have a virtual private network. We also have something that isn't meshed, so there's no redundancy. If we have a network section that goes down in the middle somewhere, we might not be able to talk anymore. And where we're different is that we would be able to provide you with the same features of a virtual private network, in the sense that when we were talking, it would be private, but we wouldn't have to be paying for it 24/7, so we'd have a considerable cost savings. And because the middle network is meshed, we have many different routes in order to for you and I to reach each other. For example, we might be going through Houston, we might be going through Chicago. Today it could be different than tomorrow, and it doesn't matter if a network section goes down in either one of those cities. We just happen to be routed around it.
Right. So in fact, it's virtual private network on demand, and with all the advantages of the internet architecture that allows for the best route to be found by the bits.
That's quite accurate. Yeah.
Okay. Could you be more specific about some other markets, some other industries that will be involved here? For example, health or education or government.
Yep. Health, I think, is very, very near and dear to us. We've one of our members of our board of advisors has been focused on accessibility for people with disabilities over the last 20 years.
Right.
And so we have a very strong interest in providing privacy for health issues. If this gentleman is a quadriplegic, if he needs to go see the doctor for anything, it's quite an outing. He has to arrange transport. It's expensive, it's cumbersome, and in some cases it can also hurt his health, especially if he has to fly somewhere. But if he could be communicating with a specialist somewhere over a private video conferencing link, if something like that were possible where he didn't have to travel, then that would be what he would choose to do. Also, the access to his records then could be possible, could be used by that specialist who could be in another city without it having to be delivered physically or over an unsecure network.
Okay, and we started by talking about money. We haven't mentioned banking. Presumably this is useful for banks and other financial institutions.
Banking, especially when you're doing personal banking, where you have to deal directly with your account managers, I think it's very significant. The banks are quite advanced, actually. They've built their own networks. They probably pay a lot for these networks, and we do believe that we have an opportunity to provide a competitive offering to that industry. We have had many instances over the last couple of years in particular where ATMs were attacked, ATM machines. There's a lot of banking that's happening over the internet now. If we can fit into that mix somehow, I think we're well prepared for it and would be eager to do so.
What about government in general and Homeland Security in particular?
Yeah, we've had some of those discussions as well. What I would like to say in response to that is, architecturally, I believe that we have a very good fit. We have within our talent base, we have the right people in management and the right people behind the company as advisors. But I think we need some traction. We just went public in December. We have a lot to prove, I think, before we can really attack that market.
Okay. What about high quality voice over IP?
Voice over IP is something. Again, we're not an application services company.
But you're glad to have voice over IP companies use your network.
It is possible, and they would be able to do so very cost effectively. But one thing that we've shied away from is things like voice, because for two reasons. One is it's not accessible to many people with disabilities, and so we believe that there's a far friendlier future with video conferencing.
Okay.
And the other thing is that we are also, I think, somewhat leery of regulatory pressures on voice, whereas at least in North America, they're not existing currently, as we know, anywhere for video conferencing.
Okay. How much of the system is built and in place and operating?
We're just launching the first commercial portion of the network right now, launching it out of Vancouver, Canada.
Right.
It's been contracted for to go into Los Angeles, Toronto, and New York. The network was running in prototype form for several years, and we're now at the stage where I think we will have the first commercial traffic happening over it this month.
This month. So, and is essentially the first connection, it's interesting, the first connection of the internet was between UCLA and SRI in Los Angeles and Menlo Park.
Uh-huh.
Where is the first connection going to be between Vancouver and Los Angeles?
It would appear that way, yes.
Okay, so we'll be able to do a voice video conference pretty soon?
Sure.
Good, I hope we can do that. Are your corporate offices in Vancouver or in the U.S., or what's your status as a North American company?
Sorry, it's Peter again.
Yes, Peter. This is your bailiwick.
I have to clear my throat because I don't get very many opportunities to talk in session.
Speak at great length as you want.
We're corporately structured as a Delaware company, and we have an office in Reno, Nevada, and that's the U.S. operating company. And then we have Midnet Canada Inc., which is situated in Vancouver, Canada.
Okay, and what's the relationship between the Reno operation and the Vancouver operation? In terms,
they're both the operations of the public company.
Okay, let me ask about this: are there competitors in this space that you don't name them? Of course, we don't want to give them extra publicity, but. Have other people noted this need and are trying to take care of it as well?
Mark, this is Tilo again.
Yes.
We've been looking over our shoulders for a long time.
Right.
We haven't found anyone who is doing exactly what we're doing. There's a number of companies that have built networks in order to deliver their own application services, and they built the networks because they didn't have a choice,
right,
as I was explaining earlier. And we believe that we will be working with these companies where they will be able to deliver their application services over the metal network. So apart from the internet, we haven't found any other entity so far that is doing exactly what we're doing.
Okay. Now, let me focus for the last major thing I want to address is how company, let's say I'm the IT manager at a large film studio here in Los Angeles. What's the process, both sort of procedurally and technically, to get myself hooked up to the network? How am I going to get from Burbank to wherever your endpoint node is here in L.A.?
We do all that. All you do is you sign a subscription form with us. You give us the authority to contract with a carrier to put in a local loop,
right,
into your facility. You give us the right to co-locate some of our equipment with you.
Right.
So we would put that in your telco room or your computer room. And once the carrier gives us the thumbs up that the local loop is lit, at that point you decide who you want to communicate with. You decide which application services you want to use. They could be third-party applications, or they could be your own internal applications.
So essentially, you're going to arrange with the local a telco to provide a local loop to the premises, and you're going to provide some boxes on the premises. And then that's going to hook up the company to your system.
Exactly.
Okay. How much will that cost me as a IT director of a major film studio? And for what? What levels of service are available?
If you're an anchor account, so that means you're an account we're familiar with.
Right.
We know what your usage patterns are.
Right.
We don't charge you anything, because we're very comfortable with the amount of usage you'll have over the network.
So you mean the installation, the sign-up charges are zero?
Zero. Yeah.
And can you say anything about the rates? Is it a per bit, per hour, per file? How does that work?
It's all per usage. We measure usage in gigabytes, and I'll just give you some ideas of,
okay,
what that would work out to.
Sure.
If we were video conferencing desktop quality, which generally would be 384 kbit per second.
Right.
A two-way communication would work out to about 14 cents per minute.
Oh.
If it were boardroom quality, it could easily be five times as much, but it would be comparable to watching broadcast quality television.
Okay.
Consumer grade, of course, not
studio grade.
So that's for if I'm an executive in LA who wants to talk to an executive in New York, you're saying it's from desk to desk. That's 14 cents a minute.
Yeah. And if you were collaborating, let's say on a document, and you used what would be, you know, your traditional kind of 1 inch by 1 inch type picture,
right,
of yourself, you know, full motion video, of course,
right,
but CD quality audio, like we should be able to talk clearer than we are over a telephone the way we are right now, that would work out to 2 cents a minute. So, you know, full screen video conferencing would be roughly 14, we're guessing, is what the application service providers would charge,
right,
and if it were just you know, traditional type web conferencing, but not web quality,
right,
that would work out to about 2 cents a minute.
Better than web quality, you're saying?
It would be far superior. The latency wouldn't be there. You'd have lip sync. And most importantly, I think to most of these people, it would be private. It would be reliable.
Okay, now you're
there when you need it.
Right, now you're talking about video conferencing. What about the transfer of the dailies from New York to LA or wherever? What's that typically going to cost?
Yeah, the challenge that the studios gave us at the time was that we had to be able to move their dailies for less than FedEx.
Right.
And at that time, FedEx was working out to, let's say, Vancouver to Los Angeles was as high as $50, $60 for a transfer. And you never know how long the footage is.
Right.
But let's say we can beat that. With traditional dailies, it would be less than the cost of FedEx.
Less than the cost of FedEx. Okay.
Yeah.
Big questions here. What are the biggest day-to-day and the biggest long-term challenges facing you as you build MidNet?
Okay, day-to-day and long-term.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the most difficult thing with any startup is you're a startup.
Right.
And you can have all the relationships you want. You still have to prove yourself as a company. And in our case, we've proven ourselves over the years. Technically, they know what we can do. We've built trust in the industry, so they are reasonably comfortable that we can pull things off technically. But everyone's always concerned. You have a startup company. Are you going to have enough money to be around?
Are you?
What we've had to do is show them that, you know, yeah, we actually have enough money right now to pull off our business plan.
Okay.
And we'll be around indefinitely.
Okay. And
we'll need to raise more money to grow, but not to stay in business.
All right. That's a comfortable place. What about long term? What do you see as the challenges? Competition, new technologies, changing business patterns?
The way that we've structured the company, we internally amortize everything over 18 months. So as new technology comes up, we're able to adopt it very, very quickly. So I don't think that's going to be too much of a threat for us. One of the concerns we do have is a nice problem, and that is keeping up with demand. And we believe that, you know, we've been very patient. We've waited a long time in order to roll out this business. We think we have all our ducks in a row, but if demand exceeds what we're able to fulfill on, then obviously we'll have a problem.
That's the kind of challenge that you'd like to have to face, I suppose.
It's a better problem to have than to not have the demand.
Okay. And let me ask both of you this. What are the biggest day-to-day and long-term satisfactions that you get in building MidNet? Peter, you can say something.
Mark, it's Peter. It's going back in time for me and fulfilling something that I started a number of years ago. And due to circumstances, it just wasn't there. And it's building something with two other guys that and a whole team of absolutely phenomenal people that can push this forward and accomplishing something that could be there forever, like AT&T.
Okay. Long term, what do you see as the future of MidNet, especially I think in terms of delivering content to homes and offices on a more widespread basis?
The original goal when we took on as individuals this contract with the studio project, their goal of course wasn't just production, post production. They want to take it to the home. So long term, yep, we have the opportunity if follow the course that we've set for ourselves that the studios have agreed with, to take the service straight into the home, and people should be able to receive media products and services digitally. The studio should know that they're being paid for them, eliminating as much piracy as possible. And likewise, the same connection that is delivering movies and television shows and news can also be delivering software that people could be using for something as simple as word processing or email. But it could also hopefully replace the telephone at some point in the future to something which is far more accessible, primarily for people with disabilities. And that would be, you know, something that incorporates audio, video, text, graphics, the whole kit and caboodle.
So presumably if it works out, you could essentially become the Internet without the problems.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Okay, and feeding in and collecting all of the work that people do legally and medically and in the entertainment industry, and coordinating it and facilitating the collaboration, and then distributing it to everyone who needs to be the end user.
Yeah, keeping in mind, of course, that we have no control over any of the assets that pass through us. We're simply a safe conduit.
Right.
Right. But
right.
If we can just do that one thing and do it well, I think we'll be doing something good, and we'll have a great future.
Well, that's all the Appian Way was for the Romans, and there's still remnants of it standing or sitting, whatever a road does.
Yeah.
Finally, what's the MidNet URL?
The URL is www.midnetinc.com.
That's MidNet, MIDNETINC, one word.
Yes, it is.
.com. Anything we haven't covered that people ought to know about MidNet?
I think you've done a good job in ciphering through most of our business, Mark, and we really appreciate the opportunity to expound on what we do and what we're going to do, and we feel that this project is going to work out like the fax phenomena, and we just think it's going to be one of those things that comes along once in somebody's lifetime.
Good. Well, thank you for talking to us about it on Entertainment Technology World. Hopefully, the next time we talk, maybe we'll be on video and we can let people see as well as hear what has to be said about MidNet.
We'd look forward to doing that.
Good. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.